Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's start with Cedric Howard. You've been telling people to not get ahead of themselves one way or another on Cedric Howard. And last night, as he was doing what he was doing, you were struggling with not to get ahead of yourself.
Yeah,
on Cedric Howard.
I mean, we have a history. Like rookies have good games, and like we all remember TNT Gigi, right? And yes. You know, Zaire Williams and whatever. And there's a cycle of rookies do have a good moment or good stretch, and people get excited, and it's a setup for disappointment later. And there will be ups and downs with Howard, and there may just be downs. I don't know. Nothing's guaranteed. I will say that I personally feel better about him and what he's going to be. I have more confidence in him as a basketball person, I guess, than any rookie the Grizzlies have had since, you know, the John Morant Brandon Clark class. In terms of where I'm at with him at this stage of a career, I mean, Desmond Bane was the 30th pick in the draft. There's no reason to assume right. anything, yeah. whatever. But in terms of his skill set, his physical abilities, and his personal makeup, and how all of that works in the context of NBA basketball, I just think there's a lot of good stuff there with him.
So you liked it from the, honestly, you liked the idea of him when he was drafted.
Yeah.
And then you were not discouraged by the shot missing of the preseason.
People focus way too much on three-point shots going in or not going
yeah.
in.
Yeah. So what last night, again, one night, and by the way, I did look at the all-time plus-minus debuts for rookies. Kendrick Nunn at 27 and James Singleton at also at 27, I think it was. So yeah, one good night. Whatever. Yeah,
single
whatever.
Game plus minus.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? But what did you like about last night?
I think that I've been using this phrase. I find myself using this phrase a lot with him. Functional athleticism. It's athleticism that, in the context of a basketball game, there's a mobility, there's a fluidity, there's a reaction speed thing with him. In that when he gets into flow, and this was even in the preseason, right? When he was spotted up, waiting to catch the ball and shoot, he missed the shots. But when he was in the flow of basketball on offense and defense, his physical ability and his reaction speed and his aggressiveness just made things happen. It happened the preseason. It happened last night. And it's so many little things. It's finishing with contact, like taking a bump and finishing the shot. It's quick reactions to push the ball down the floor with the dribble or with the pass and confidence there. It's reacting to make a play with a steal or a block or a contest. It's just all the little stuff in the flow of the game. And I sort of have a bias towards this sort of player type, the athletic perimeter player who is disruptive, the athletic perimeter player who is active and disruptive, right? The D'Anthony Melton type, the Vince Williams pre-injury type. Right. He is sort of that type. He's got a higher ceiling for different reasons, but he's that kind of guy who, like, whether he's even taking shots or not, he's doing things on the basketball floor that help your team.
And he was obviously instrumental last night to the Grizzlies getting back into it. And then he was part of the, you know, finishing lineup. Like he was, did that surprise, like the way he was deployed, did that, was what you expected?
Well, when Landale fouled out, he came in. So they were going to close the game at that point with Ja, KCP, Wells, Coward, and to your point, that's the elective choice,
yep,
and Jaren. Did that surprise me? No, given the flow of the game and the way he was playing. Like in a vacuum, Santi would have been the obvious guy there, but Santi was having a bad game. I mean, Santi was almost a no-show last night, and Coward was a very much show. He was there, so I thought that made sense in the moment to for him to be the choice, down the stretch like that. You know?
Urge people to read Chris's piece at the Daily Memphian and Drew's piece. You both wrote about the Zion, the moment late in the second half where the one that Isolo brought up.
Yeah.
What happened there?
You know, Zion's just attacking the rim as he was, and Grizzlies were struggling with it. And, you know, as Cedric Coward pointed out, like, I'm just trying to make the shot hard. This guy's a possible stop. So Zion could have, it's not like, you know, he alone prevented Zion Williams from some scoring. Sometimes you don't score. But he walled up and went vertical with Zion Williamson and a strong contest right at the rim with him, and Zion missed the shot, and then you know, in the scramble for the ball afterwards, Coward came up with it.
Yeah, and one of the points that Isolo made was that these are it really is another way. He was talking about the elite verticality, this is not it's a form of the functional athleticism. Like,
right,
he can do those sorts of things with some of the best athletes in the entire league.
Yeah, no, he is not. You know, he is not, you know, Zaire Williams, who's a ball of clay physically. And you wonder about, you know, he's long, but he's also really thin. And Cedric Howard has there's growth to come with him, you know, but athletically he's ready. He's fully ready right now.
And I think 23 looks great. He looks great. All right. So really the most promising thing that happened last night, and again, you were whatever, it's one day game, whatever.
Yeah,
was Cedric Coward the star of the show? Was Ja?
Yeah, and Ja sort of picked up. I don't know whether how much it was the defense and how much of it was him just, you know, getting more comfortable as the game went on, and how much it was him just sort of holding back and then picking his spots. But really, the second half, in the first half, he was mostly taking jump shots, mid range jump shots, 3-point shots. In the second half, he was, I'm trying to remember, he's 10 of 11 in the game, 2 of 2 in the first half, so that would be 8 of 9. He was 8 of 9 in the paint in the second half, right, of that game. And the question of, like, you know, does he still want to get to the rim? Can he still get to the rim? The answer last night, at least, was yes and yes. And in the second half of the game, when he was in the game, you felt like the Grizzlies were in control of the game.
It was also, I mean, there's just moments where he just takes a beating. I mean, it's just even like
that's part of it.
One, it's just, fully in control. And he did it. I mean, he was efficient.
And the jump shot stuff, was like, he was 2 of 6 from three, which is, that's better than his career average. Right. He hit, like, I remember the first shot of the game he hit was a mid-range pull-up. So it's not like he wasn't making jumpers, but he was more dynamic when he got into the paint.
13 to 20 overall. I thought he was playing his butt off defensively, too. Like, he was busting his ass like he has limitations.
No, he played a really good game. Now, he had 3 assists and I think 2 turnovers, which is to me not a him thing. That's a the team framework, right, thing. That's a signal like the team is not exactly clicking, which I didn't expect it to be.
Right.
I thought it was going to be I thought it was going to be extended preseason. I worried that's what it would be. That's what it was in the first half. And so if the team can really get into a rhythm, you're going to see games where he's going to have, you know, double, triple, maybe, right, quadruple assist, that, you know, in assists, and the team will be better in those games. But that, I think that's more of a team thing than a him thing.
I like a happy Ja, too, and he was certainly happy afterwards.
Yeah, like, he was in a good mood.
Explain what happened with Cedric Coward after the game.
So Coward, this seems to be pattern. It used to be like Jalen Wells was always the first one ready to talk, and now it looks like it's going to be Coward, at least so far it's been in preseason.
They teach him in Washington
night.
State. They teach him the right things. Yeah.
So Coward was the first guy available to talk to, and he was also one of the players people most wanted to talk to.
Yeah.
So there's a huge scrum around Coward, and he's doing the thing. And Ja basically, you know, Ja will just, all the players decide when they're ready to talk, but Ja will announce, okay, I'm ready, because Ja assumes people want to talk to him, because that is a correct assumption.
Right.
And they do. Like this, so it's a public service for Ja to say, okay, I'm ready now.
To talk.
And so Ja's on the opposite end of the locker room, and Ja gets done earlier than usual, and he says, okay, I'm ready. And people start drifting over to Ja. But some people stay with Coward, and Coward's still talking, and Ja looks up and said, is he still talking? Doesn't he know I was like
I'm
trying,
doing this for him.
I'm doing this for him. I'm
doing you a favor, bro.
Right.
Yeah. And he really seemed to enjoy the moment on behalf of Cedric Howard. Like the how much that Cedric Howard was getting to enjoy this first win. So yeah. It was a happy job last night. What did you think? Isolo talked about playing him in stints. Three stints a half.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I had noted, in my game notes, which I didn't even go back to look at and probably left stuff on the cutting room floor because I was too tired. But Jaren Jackson played three different stints in the first quarter. And that's something I noted in the moment. And that, we'll see if that pattern continues through the season, how much of that is related to like early season and you're worried about runners, guys going longer periods. But the substitution rhythm was very quick.
Yep.
He wants quick pace, and he wants quick pace in part with quick substitutions. And he sort of made the point, this is how helps us maintain intensity. And if you look at Ja, you have the box in front of you. I don't, but he had 35 points in 28 minutes, something like that?
Yep, 35 points.
Yeah. And so like that's high production relative to, like you're maximizing your impact there in your playing time. There was a moment in the third quarter where Grizzlies are down 11 at the half. And there was a moment in the early third where, my memory serves, I may be slightly off in this, but I think they scored three straight possessions and like two of them were Ja buckets and one was a Ja assist. And it felt like Ja was picking up a rhythm and starting to grab control of the game. And he subbed him out at that moment. And I was like, now? I mean, you kind of break in the rhythm. Right. It's happening now. But, you won the game. And so maybe it was the right decision.
It'll
be
interesting to watch that. Yeah, he believes in stints. And, he talked about that last year, playing with pace. No, I can play harder.
I think it's right that can help maintain pace and intensity and energy. But I wonder about chemistry and rhythm and breaking chemistry and rhythm doing that. So I think it bears watching.
Let's move on to Jaren. Thoughts on Jaren's game?
I mean, it was a mixed bag with Jaren. Obviously he fouled out and he also had a lot of turnovers, but those are sort of an overlapping. There's a Venn diagram overlap there. A lot of the turnovers were the fouls. And so he fouled out and he missed all of his threes. That's the bad side of the coin. He had six blocks and he was pretty dynamic inside the arc offensively. And I think really carried the Grizzlies in a crucial third quarter stretch when they were turning the game. So I thought it was a good game overall for him.
The fouls, how many were offensive?
Three of the four in the first half were offensive, and I think both in the second half were defensive. So three offensive fouls. One was on a screen, and that's, I think, a real concern, a thing to look at, because he had, in the last preseason game, he had three fouls just setting screens in that game.
Well, that's the thing. If you're going to deploy him in this new fashion.
He has not been used to doing that, and it may well be that the Grizzlies went away from using him as a screener because of the chance of him getting fouls doing it. But you're not going to get good at something unless you do it. And so it'll be interesting to see, how much they lean in or pull back from some of the usage stuff there with him.
Must have been music to your ears to hear Isolo talking about not fouling out his own players and deciding to play Jaren through the foul trouble.
The Grizzlies could have lost that game. And if the Grizzlies had lost that game, people would be upset today about how do you leave him on the court in the third quarter with the second quarter with three fouls. This is crazy. He got four fouls in the first half. And he wasn't there. You lost this game, and he wasn't on the floor at the end of the game. And there's just no fighting that. They won the game, so people aren't mad about that.
Right.
But the reality is, either way, the narrative pull of the fourth quarter is so profoundly strong that no amount of logic can pierce it.
Right. Yeah.
Baskets do not count more in the fourth quarter.
As you pointed out, he had four fouls in the third quarter. He played 9 minutes.
With four fouls. He would have been sitting on the bench last year.
With four fouls. And they came into that quarter trailing by 11, and in his minutes that he played in the third quarter, this is Chris's piece in the Daily Memphian,
they won by 13. It was a crucial stretch. I know it was still a tie game with 3 minutes to go, and Ja hits the big shot, and it feels like nothing mattered before that moment.
They only got there because of that.
But they wouldn't have been in that moment.
All right. I don't know that we expected to see Omax Prosper among the first off the bench, but he was the first off. And obviously, this is matchup specific.
Well, partly. I asked Thomas Isola that question about. I didn't reference PJ Hall and GG Jackson, but the inference was why Prosper over these guys, And the first thing he said was, we thought he was one of our better defensive matchups with Zion Williamson, which makes all the sense in the world when you look at the roster and you think about Zion. But then after that, he also said, we thought he was good in the preseason with the energy and with the...
Right.
So it's not clear to me if they had been playing Indiana last night, would Prosper have been in that role instead of Hall or Jackson? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But the Zion matchup was a factor in getting him out there. That makes a lot of sense. But it also speaks well of Omax Prosper, because there aren't a lot of Zions, but there are other like big ball handlers you got to try to defend. And if you have faith in him to play that kind of role, that role is going to be there in other games too.
Well, it's just what he does. Like, he is a wild man offensively,
yeah.
but not in a terrifying way. A little Tony Allen quality to him when Tony was really getting going. But like, they wanted someone who can guard, and that's not GG Jackson.
That's a thing. I mean, is Prosper getting those minutes and GG getting DNP an indictment of GG? To some degree, it has to be, because they're the same. They're the same build. They're like the same height, the same weight, the same. Right. You know, the age is not that different. You know, I mean, there are two sides of the coin. GG's a guy who gets buckets, but doesn't to this point do a lot else. And Prosper's a guy who does not get buckets,
right,
but does a lot of other things.
He hits clutch free throws.
He did hit clutch free throws.
He hits clutch free throws.
And so the GG thing, I don't know. It's one game. We'll see. But it's one game in year three. And I feel like it would probably be better for all parties at this point if GG was playing on the Brooklyn Nets or Washington Wizards, getting a lot of minutes that he needs in a situation where there's not a lot of risk in getting him the minutes.
As you point out, it's not a great game for Santi. He had some when he came in.
Oh, I thought it was a no-show game for Santi, other than a couple decent plays.
In the fourth quarter, he had a block or two that mattered. He was pretty bad.
He also had a play where he caught the ball 2 feet from the basket and hesitated, and the whole arena just yelling, score, shoot, right. Do something, and then he hesitated, then he scored.
Finally did. That was his first bucket. I think he was 0-5 until then. And then let's just go down the roster a little bit. Javon Small and Cam Spencer.
The Javon Small minutes were sort of interesting to me for how anonymous they were. The Grizzlies were +6 when he was on the floor. They won his minutes. So clearly his presence was not killing the team.
3 assists.
Yeah. But I didn't notice him doing anything, really. I'm watching the game and I barely noticed him on the floor.
I noticed one really quick pass to an open three for Jalen Wells. Like he moves the ball.
So, I mean, the first do no harm, as they say. And so when you're a backup point guard who's a rookie second-round pick, the first thing is to, like, have your minutes be survivable, and his minutes were survivable. And if they can get survivable minutes from him every night, like, they'll take it, you know?
Really the best news was what Cedric Howard looked like, I thought. And then you had Jaren and Ja. And again, you did this with limited minutes. Like, they were good, and you got the win, even though they were playing limited minutes. I will say, like, watching it, It was like, man, there's going to be some tough games for this. Like, watching the lineups,
they gave
to
up
run
17 offensive rebounds, which is not an anomaly, I don't think. Jock Landale, I think, is a perfectly good third string center,
yes,
and they're playing him as a starter. And I worry about that. We'll see if they add a big next week, and if that big could help them at all.
He cannot finish at all.
No,
like,
so
he just can't.
He if he were in the same role. Different player, but if he were in the same role that Jay Huff was in last year, that's fine. Like, you know, you some nights you play, some nights you don't. When you play 10 minutes, that's what he should be, and that he just can't because of the Edie and Brandon Clark injuries. So I think he would be fine for the contract he's on and the role he's supposed to be in, but the injuries have pushed him into this other role, and he's just not really good enough for it, I don't think.
And then we had the NBA news with the Chauncey Billups thing. I don't know if you've
I've seen headlines, and I saw some weird press conference that the FBI director, where he said something like, this is the insider trading scandal of the NBA. I need more information on that. I don't know. Yeah. The thing about the Billups part of it, obviously, like, NBA coach is like a big bright headline. NBA coach was a great player. But it was a poker game.
It was a poker game.
And I just don't.
Nobody cares. Who cares about a poker game?
Given all that's happening in the world, including in the world of gambling, like a private poker game that's illegal, like, whatever. I don't care. You know?
I don't care at all. That's exactly the point I made. In the meantime, I didn't see a second of it because we were otherwise occupied at FedEx Forum. But Wemby basically ate the universe last night, and DJ Edgecombe is.
No, those were the eye-popping stat lines of the night. I mean, we haven't had a rookie, I think it was the highest scoring rookie debut since Wilt or whatever.
Right.
So Edgecombe, some guys just pop in the pros, who, you know, more so than they did in college. And he was, he's a guy with his athletic profile. People wondered if he would be one of those guys. So it's one game. So we'll see. And Wimby, like, it's just, it might be happening.
The text from my son, Wimby looks like the best athlete I have ever seen in any sport in my life.
No, like, there are, and Jokic and Embiid are a little bit different. There was a little bit more of a slow growth with Jokic than Embiid with the injury stuff, whatever. But we haven't had the like young generational big man, I mean, really since Duncan, and then you had the whole Shaq and Olajuwon era. Yeah. It's been a long time since we've had that kind of guy, and he looks like he's that guy.
Anything else strike you from the show? Anything different last night from the, you know, from the show perspective, from the scene? The
Very, very subtle thing that I don't know how many people enjoyed, but I enjoyed. They used this Jay-Z song on the opening video, and the line, I'm the CEO of the ROC, which was the Rockefeller Records company, but also basketball. The basketball is the rock. Uh-huh. He timed the I'm the CEO of the ROC to John Morant whipping a pass, and I enjoyed that edit to the music. So shout out to Michael Blevins for that moment. I thought the throwback uniforms looked good. The throwback court looked good. The other trappings, I mean, it was all fine, but it was not. It was sort of, you know, the rapper leads them out. We've seen this before, so yeah. It was fine.
And you missed Carla.
I miss Carla. Sometimes nature calls at the wrong time. And, like, no offense to Shinedown, but I wish I had timed it to see Carla and then go to the bathroom because, you know, Carla Thomas is a queen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.